Welcome to Parents' Perspective. OMG, Jadeen wrote frantically to her best pal, Kelly. My mom just asked to friend me. Bummer, their friend Zach chimed in from cyberspace. What could she be thinking of? Prodded Kelly. Does she know about last Saturday? No, how could she? Replied Jadeen. Can't figure what she wants, inserted Jack. She didn't call my dad, right? This is so embarrassing, Jadeen added lots of frowny faces. What do I do now? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about friending our kids online? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited with Parents Perspective before. He specifically works with the kinds of information and issues raised in internet use. Dr. Kent L. Norman is an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Maryland. He's the director of the Laboratory for Automation Psychology and Decision Processes and is a founding member of the Human-Computer Interaction Laboratory in the iSchool at the university. His research and teaching is on human-computer interaction, cognitive issues in interface design and evaluation, and most recently, issues in video games and online social networking. He's the author of the recent book Cyber Psychology and the author or co-author of many journal articles and book chapters. Dr. Norman is married and has two sons and two daughters. Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
Thank you very much, Linda.
Would you explain first what we mean by friending someone online?
Years ago, before the internet, we had a clearer idea of what friends were and becoming friends. But today, with the internet, it's both much vaguer and also much more, I'm going to use the term operational. And what I mean by that is that it becomes a simple operation of clicking a button on the screen to send a friend request to somebody else and that other person accepting that friend request. And then it becomes a little piece of information in a database. So it's a very concrete operational thing called friending. Now, what it means to us is totally open because it could mean that it's a very special person that I've let to be a friend on this network, or it could be just anybody that I let in. So some people have a select set of 20, 30 friends. I personally have 168 friends. And other people have record numbers of tens of thousands of friends. I really don't know what the record is right now, but somebody will continue to break it and get larger and larger number of friends. So those kind of friends are totally meaningless. But it really becomes an issue of how you define friending. So it's very personal for each individual. And for kids, that's especially true because some of them will have a closed circle and they'll friend just the people they know face-to-face personally. Sometimes friending might mean that it's a clique of individuals. It might mean a very small circle, or it might mean, well, I'm extending it to friends and family and people at work or whoever. So it's defined individually.
The business of having thousands of friends, is that just a competition to see how many you can have?
Yes. Yes, it purely is. And that happens also in high school. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, people on the internet that are just like to do that. But it can also happen in competition at high school. You know, who can be friends with everybody in the class? So it can be a problem with some people that can be ostracized.
What is so compelling to kids about online social networking?
Well, the thing is, the social networking sites provide some really fascinating services and attractions, and they really encourage people to friend basically because they want to have larger and larger numbers of members and more connections. Why? Because it's more and more in their databases. The more time you spend online, the more advertisements you're going to see. You don't pay for a lot of these services. They're really driven by advertising revenues.
So you would think that the reverse would be true. You wouldn't want to spend so much time online because you wouldn't want to be bombarded by these ads that you really don't want.
Well, it's easy to ignore them. So they're kind of off in the margin on most of these things. But they can be a little irritating. And so social networking sites like Facebook, MySpace, Friendster have to be kind of careful about not overwhelming with advertisements and things and keeping them at the side. Just like Google is the same thing. It's driven by advertising and marketing. But people use it because it provides great services to individuals. So one of the compelling things about the networking sites is that they can upload pictures. They can stay in touch with what they're doing, status of friends. They can write to each other constantly and share personal messages or public messages. There's just a number of things. Plus, a lot of the services now have different games. So there's a number of games that can be played in competition between friends to see who has the best score. So there's also a lot of peer pressure. In a class of high schoolers, for example, everybody's on it. So if you're not on Facebook, then you're just not connected. You're really viewed as being a little weird at this point. Facebook started by Mark Zuckerberg at Harvard in his dorm room, you know, in 2003, which really isn't that long ago. And then he extended it to the university in 2004. And in 2005, the network was extended to high schoolers. To us, it might seem like a short period of time, but to high schoolers, it's their whole life. They're in the Facebook generation.
If we want to improve our face-to-face interactions with our own kids, why add the artificial construct of connecting online?
In some cases, there's no need because you've got that face-to-face communication and there's nothing really added by social networking. In other cases, particularly if the kids are far away, they're living away from home, or they want to connect with friends that are further away or have moved, then Facebook is the way to do it. It's a global community at this point. So it adds that kind of continuing communication further away. Artificial is kind of an interesting thought. To us, it's artificial. To the high schoolers and college students, it's reality. It's the way that they communicate. We did a survey in one of my classes, and the students reported they spend an average of 1.5 hours on Facebook a day. One student was writing a note saying, every morning I get up, I check Facebook, check the status of my friends, see what the news items are. Around noon, I'll check it again, and then certainly in the evening, she'll check it. They spend hours looking at each other's pictures, reading each other's notes. And it's not that it's taking away from face-to-face interaction. That also occurs because a lot of it is involved in planning parties. So my kids, for example, will have a birthday party. Well, where do they announce the birthday party? On Facebook.
But doesn't that immediately then, unless you have a teeny little group of friends, put that out to the whole everybody, even people who are not invited, know that there's a party? I can see this sort of getting out of hand with teenagers, certainly.
Right. I mean, you have to be careful because you can invite too many people and, you know, you have a party and, wow, 200 people show up. That's a problem. So you have to be careful. So it depends on what you mean by friending. And you can also send selective messages, just a set number of individuals that are in the group. So the kids today are becoming very good at figuring out how to handle these sorts of things. This is what's really kind of interesting. They know a lot more about privacy settings, you know, who sees what, than even parents do, you know, because they're thinking about, well, how do I keep my mom or dad from looking at their site?
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on should we friend our kids?
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Kent Norman about whether we as parents should friend our kids online. What is the difference between the way adults view online social interactions and the way our kids view them?
Kids obviously tend to be a little more playful, creative, open, exploring things. So they tend to perhaps be a little more risky in some ways and a little more fun. Adults tend to be much more practical. Like, why am I a member of Facebook? Well, I'm a member of Facebook just to be able to look at a picture that was put up there. They might email me and said, have you checked my Facebook pictures, because you can see I put some pictures of me skateboarding, and Dad, I really want you to see these. So it becomes very much the space of sharing with one another. And so parents often get online just to be able to communicate in a broader way with their kids.
And that would require Facebook or something like that.
Yes.
Rather than somebody just scanning a photo to you.
Right. I mean, that's the way we would kind of do it.
To me, I'd email, and I might have five or six people I'm emailing those mm-hmm. photos to at one time
yeah.
rather than put it out on Facebook, which mm-hmm. seems to me terribly public.
Right. But see, we are members of the email generation. Well, my brother, who's 7 years older than I am, got on Facebook in order to start communicating with his two daughters and nephews and nieces and with me. Because email we don't email each other that much. But on Facebook, it's much more of fluid communication.
And it's sort of an online diary?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And it's interesting because if you change something on your page, it will send out an announcement of that change. Now, I made a mistake doing that because I was checking Facebook and I was noticing, gee, on my relationship status, I had not indicated that I'm married. All right?
Oh, boy.
So I put down married and I get all these messages.
Congratulations.
And I got one from a secretary at the university who said, it's about time. And so I said, well, wait a second.
That's really funny.
You know,
what have you seen is the most likely reaction of a teen whose parents might initiate friending the teen?
After the rolling of the eyes, there is probably kind of a little bit of thinking or analysis of what's on my Facebook account, my profile, friends. Is it something that I can share with parents? And then realizing, okay, more sets of eyes in that pool. And so it really depends a lot on the individual. I don't really know what the typical one would do, but we did a survey this last fall of about 300 and something individuals, of friends, of people asking them whether you had friended your parents or not. And here's the results. For males, only 13% had parents as friends. For females, it was 35% were friends.
Why do you think there was that disparity?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of a dangerous thing to make some hypotheses about, but there are certainly differences, first in terms of the communication of males versus females. So females are much greater users of Facebook than males, so that's one aspect. And I probably attribute it to that, rather than males being more protective of what their parents might look at. The other is, of course, you could say, well, we've got this double standard. You know, parents want to look into what their daughters are doing more than their sons are doing. So I don't know. It's an open one for research, I think, in the future. But the gender differences seem to be very, very significant.
What kinds of online connections are likely to promote positive parent-teen interactions?
I think that there's a lot of things that families and parents and teens need to do together. And if they can do those online, for example, pictures of birthday parties. So we always take pictures of birthday parties at our house, you know, blowing out the candles. And so those go up on Facebook. So I'll have a set of pictures. My son or daughter will have sets of pictures. And so instead of having little pieces of 5x6 cards passing them around or emailing them, we just put them up on Facebook. They can be tagged to each other so we can have a collection together. So those sorts of family events, vacations are really very, very positive things to do on Facebook. But then it's kind of a family circle of friends. And then you have to think about, well, do I want my friends in high school to see what's going on in the family? or people outside of that to see the family pictures that are going on.
Does this mean that before kids get on Facebook, parents need to sit down and have another kind of talk with their teens or maybe middle schoolers?
Yes. You know, I think years ago we would talk about, well, how do you dress? How do you, you know, what's your language and everything? Well, now all of this extends to this new social space. How do you present yourself in the cyberspace, the cyber world out there? And it's becoming more and more important. What pictures do you put up? Because it's a projection. You're managing
your persona.
Yes, you're managing your persona and how other people look at you. And we do that in the mirror every morning. We straighten our hair. We make sure that we're looking fine. And we have to think about that as well in these social spaces where we're likely to be seen more often than we would face to face.
Are there risks involved with this?
It's really important to go through. I think teens and parents should take a look at the privacy settings on Facebook and any of the other sites and even their home networks to go through the kind of settings of who can view what so that only specific friends can view them, only particular networks can view them, and you can even block users. The sites are becoming very aware of this problem, and there will be things that you will be able, I think, in the future to say for this photo album, this set of people can view it. You know, and other people can't.
Does this stuff stay on forever so that what you've put on as a 15-year-old, if you're applying for a job as a 25-year-old, it's still there for somebody to delve into and find?
No. Fortunately, you can go in and delete pictures, delete things, change things, clean them up. So that's very, very important. And I think, you know, all these networking sites are aware of this. The next question is, well, is it somewhere on some server that they have? And the answer is it could be. It may not be permanently erased, but it's limited from view by the public on the internet.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on should we friend our kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Kent L. Norman about whether we as parents should friend our kids. How are online social networks helpful to teens developing social skills?
They learn to type.
We all want them to be able to do that. Yeah. Good point.
And so it's kind of an odd thing. But my kids did not learn through typing tutor or typewriters. They really learned to type because of Facebook. Strange. But there's a number of more social interaction skills that I think these social networking sites help with. One of the things we have to remember is that these networking sites are here. Then they're here to stay. They've only been here for a few years, but they will be continuing and evolving into bigger and bigger things. So we have to be aware of this. We have to grow into them. And so this generation has to learn its way in this new landscape. So they really need to learn how to balance things, do things in moderation, to present themselves properly. In one of our surveys, I had this one teacher who wrote, "I've taught high school students for 34 years, and Facebook is one of the most popular, unique ways I have seen for young people to communicate with others and expand their social networks." So we're aware that they are on these networks, they're using these networks, and they're learning to manage these things probably, you know, better than we would, you know, when we get on to these things. They can learn positive things, supporting one another, communicating, helping one another, consoling one another, increasing faith and testimony about their own lives. On the other hand, they also need to learn to avoid a lot of the negative things like gossiping, bullying, slander, bad language. So they learn these kind of values in social networking sites.
And do the social networking sites promote the learning of what we would call positive values, or they just permit these things to go on and then the chips fall where they may?
The sites themselves are pretty much out of the value decision. But they do have an option on most pictures and things of report this, because things that are pornographic are certainly not allowed. Things that are hate things can be reported. So there is that facility to report things that are a problem.
And who do they report them to?
Well, those get reported to the Facebook or social networking officials or people that are monitoring these.
And then what do they do with them?
Hopefully they can pull pictures down if they really are deemed to be a problem. But it does take a while. People have said, you know, it'll take, you know, 3 or 4 days for something to come down. That can be an issue. Other sites are interesting that they get taken down within seconds.
Do you think that parents who are turned down by their children, if they try to friend them, should have some concerns? I mean, you can say, no, I don't know the person, or no, I don't want to be that person's friend, because I get requests to be somebody's friend from people I've never heard of. So I just don't respond to those things. But if it were one of my kids.
Yes. Well, then I think you need to go offline sometimes and talk to them. But certainly if you don't know the person, you should definitely not accept the friend request. Also, you have to remember that you shouldn't feel bad if somebody refuses a friend request, a daughter, a son, or a parent refuses the connection. It just means that for them, that channel is not the channel that they want to open up at that point. And it depends, again, on the individual. It depends on how you're using this site, what it's for, who the circle of friends are. I think we've been very positive about this, but there really is, you know, a lot of negative sides, because once you open up a friend to one person, then it can be connected to the friend of that friend, to a friend. And we're not really sure about the level of exposure right now. The amount of information that Facebook is gathering on the whole world is astounding. We're kind of going back, I was thinking, we're kind of going back to those days of living in a little town where everybody knew everybody and what everybody did. Except that it's a global level. And so we really don't know how the psychological and sociological impact is going to go. One of the odd things that we find is this new phenomenon of viral events of something happening in one Facebook message, and then it just kind of spreading through the whole globe just overnight. And you just can't believe, you know, who started this, what started this.
And going along with that, someone could start a story which may or may not be true, and this viral effect can just take it, and then it's really out of control, basically.
That's right. That's right. So in a small town, you know, you might have a mob that gets formed, but it's only a finite mob. I mean, maybe 100, 200 people. Globally, we can start getting into millions.
It does sound, though, like those of us who were not born into the computer generation but have had to learn as adults might need to learn more about these social network sites.
We really do. Absolutely. We really need to be doing much more research on them. We need to be aware of them. We need to just kind of go out and explore them every once in a while.
I guess the thing you think about with kids is if they spend that much time per day, what does it mean they're not spending time on? What gets sacrificed? Because the hours of the day haven't increased.
And hopefully it's things like watching TV or playing video games. Better to be social than, you know, and interacting with friends and family than it is to just be sitting, you know, watching the tube.
Have they found in studies at all whether using the social networks prohibits growth in face-to-face interactions? I'm thinking in terms of you've got a screen and you don't have the visual cues unless you're doing the video chat kind of thing. And so you're dependent on the words that are coming up and the way the words that are presented, not the kind of interactions that you get when you're with a friend or when you're going for a job interview or other kinds of things where you really need to know what's happening in a much more visceral way.
Right. I don't think we have the research results on that, but I think anecdotally, the answer is that they're not losing those skills. They are continuing with face-to-face interaction. One of the things in particular I notice that a lot of times people scan through Facebook pages or YouTube videos, not by themselves, but with other people. So it's this kind of three-way conversation. So in my household, you know, my son and daughter will be sitting at the same computer, you know, looking at it together.
But of course their faces are
they're both
forward. It's parallel play.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, this conversation could go on and on, but we have to close. But before we do, Dr. Norman, can you give us any resources that you would suggest for our listeners who want to pursue this subject a little further?
Well, of course, you can friend somebody and see how that works out. But I do suggest exploring the networking sites. I can also give you a link to my lab that has a link to a number of the sites. Just things to be aware of places like cybersmartkids.com, isafe.inc, and safekids.com. There's a lot of these, and you can get to these links by going to lap.umd.edu and click on Internet Issues.
Well, you have certainly helped us with a lot of internet issues, particularly the idea of the social networking sites between parents and children. So, Dr. Kent Norman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 426 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Joseph and Anna Smith Foundation. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.